Luna lies in her bed, buried beneath mounds and mounds of covers, because she is always cold these days, her face hidden in her hands and arms, closed to the world because she is powerless. All she does is feel. She hurts and weeps bitter tears because no one knows, no one can know, not even Harry and Buffy. They are useful. Buffy has her rage and death in her veins, yelling and punching, kicking and howling against whatever dares stand in her way. Buffy's gift is death, and she gives it to all who deserve. Buffy is strong. Her body is strong and able. She can protect. She can punish. She can end. And Harry is right beside her, magic and knowledge, words and whispers in his head. They fight. They create. Luna's only gift is to hurt when others hurt. Fights incapacitate her, and rage leaves her immobile, panting on the floor. They are useful. She feels a gentle draft as the door opens, hears the creak of worn floorboards, and looks up and see in the faint light of a half-closed door, two figures. One wears only his boxers, and by the looks of it, the other stole his shirt from him. They pad barefoot toward the bed, crawl under the covers on either side of her, and pull them snug against their lithe bodies. Harry wraps his arms around Luna's waist and pulls her close enough to kiss her tears away, while Buffy becomes a living vine, attaching herself to them, wrapping them up like she never wants to let go, and maybe she won't. Luna can hope. Moments later, the three of them drift off to sleep, a bundle of limbs and beating hearts, of borrowed time and ugly scars, because Harry and Buffy are long dead. They faced death and they lost, just ghosts now, and Luna lives in their hearts and souls and dies with them every single time. Their dreams are soft and warm, gentle caresses and loving touches against her mind. Their dreams are happy. For her. Harry is dueling Snape in the Room of Requirement, under the watchful eyes of the headmaster, Buffy, and Luna. Luna spanned a dome of protective light over the girls, and uses her own wand to teach Buffy some spells. She can turn her hair green now, and almost gets the feather to float as she watches Harry dive out of the corner of her eye. He comes to his feet, and is thrown back by yellow boil hex, crashing into the nearest wall, which bends and twists and spits him back into the middle of the room. Again. He climbs to his feet, ignores the sneer sent his way, the sharp barb, the vicious insult. Too tired to lose his temper, too sweaty, too exhausted. But Snape keeps going like a rock downhill, a kite in a strong wind. He's unstoppable, and Harry falls. Again. He ducks and spins, trying to force a three-word incantation into half a second as he avoids another volley of red streaks and lands on his face. Again. Another incantation, not fast enough, not clear enough, not quite enough, and his plans are thwarted. Again. With a cry of fury, Harry sends his wand spinning toward the girls, where it bounces off the shield and stops. He runs his hand through his hair, like Buffy does when she's angry, and growls like Luna. This isn't working! Dumbledore smiles indulgently as he summons the wand and floats it home into its owner's hands. Harry has to learn. This is war, after all. Buffy burns her feather and gives back the wand. Luna dispels the ward. Again. The aging hero orders from the sidelines, and Buffy wonders how he got to be so old and stay so naive. Wonders where he buys his monthly supply of innocence and joy, and snorts at the thought. Drugged lemon drops, she decides, as Harry's wand is airborne once more, hitting the headmaster in the chest with a dull thud. No. Snape sneers, and Luna contemplates idly if the man has any other facial expression. Buffy sighs, and eyes her sideways for thinking weird thoughts. He bellows, Give it up, headmaster! He's just too stupid to learn. Buffy sighs, tucks a loose strand of hair behind Luna's ear, and climbs to her feet with a weary sigh. Old. Too old. So old that Dumbledore looks young and naive next to her, and he is. They'll never know how he turned this old, and remained so light. Maybe they don't want to know. Maybe you're just teaching the wrong things, she suggests mildly, as she picks up the abused wand and gives it back one last time. She waves the professors off with a flick of her wrist, dismissing them. Insects? It's not them who have to kill. Then she crosses the room to stand 30 feet from Harry, her eyes fixed on his, green on green, a connection that Luna can feel deep in her bones. Fighter. Kill me. One pair of green eyes orders all the calm in the world. Hurt me, bleed me, make me break. is what echoes across her mind, and she's not sure if she doesn't mean it. She's tired of scraped knees. Luna turns away, starting to doodle with her wand on the floor. "Are you sure?" Harry asks, but his voice tells that, yes, she is sure. Words mean so little nowadays. Meaning was never less clear. They are running out of sanity and purpose as time draws short. This isn't war yet, but war is coming, sneaking up on them, bringing old aches and old pains. It's hard to look down a straight road these days and not see kinks and curves. So hard. Luna closes her eyes and pulls them together with effort as Buffy nods and smirks. And then the fight is on. Harry's wand is a blur as magic and all colors of the rainbow streak toward the momentary enemy. The words falling from his mouth are just that. Words. No incantations, no things to cut and twist his tongue with. Words and power and stunned professors. Speechless, maybe. And Buffy spins, twists, jumps, somersaults, runs, ducks, bends at impossible angles. Not a single spell hits, and the pace picks up. Faster and faster, and Spike's face flashes through Luna's mind as the fight stops being a fight and becomes a dance of death and passion and life and bent roads. She closes her eyes and lets adrenaline and exhilaration, not her own, flood her system. Release. Such sweet release, and soon all they can look straight again as doubt and fear and demons are burned away with every move, every twist, every flick of Harry's wrist. Such a fine line that they walk, and she can hear Buffy howl with joy in her head as the swirls of color start filling the room, and Dumbledore's beard suddenly starts moving on its own. Magic crackles. It hisses and dances through the room, too much to simply dispel, not enough to do anything but stay and swirl, and suddenly Buffy stops dancing and just stands in the middle of the room, her arms spread wide as magic catches between her fingertips. There's blue and red near her head, yellow at her waist and purple at the tips of her fingers, and they move as she moves, weaving a pattern of color and light as her body orders. Buffy laughs like a bell on a clear spring morning, and Luna jumps, abandons her wand, and runs to join the fun. She grabs a pink bit of magic and shapes a heart, before pushing it at Snape, giggling all the way. She makes more hearts and flowers and blobs with funny faces, a rainbow, and another one, a net of blue and green, a purple drizzle, and she yells, "More!" Harry obliges as Luna grabs Buffy's hand, smashing purple and orange together, causing an explosion that binds them for a moment before they giggle and start to spin. Their hands remain joined as they use their free hands to weave and create, starting a storm of magic and light in the middle of the room that soon spreads and grows, pulling more and more into its maelstrom until everything is moving, spinning. The room is full of colors when Harry stops casting and sits down, a smile like pure joy and bliss on his face as he claps in time with the girl's spins. The professors stare, not believing their eyes, watching in awe and fear, and maybe a little bit of worship, but Harry doesn't see. And so the girls spin and spin and spin, and war is drawing closer and they are running out of time. The soft pitter-patter of shoes on smooth rock breaks the silence first, followed by a sweet laugh and giggle. A black-haired boy climbs through the mouth of the cave, turns, reaches out and pulls through a girl with red curls and a beautiful smile. Their clothes are patched up and worn, but clean. The boy's hair is cropped short, the girl's just long enough to be tied back. There were lice last winter. With movements made to impress teenage girls, the boy pulls a candle stub out of his pocket, followed by a matchbox, half empty and squished. He lights the stub, places it carefully in a niche of rock and shadow, and then takes care to wipe all leaves and twigs that litter the ground beneath their only source of light away. The girl watches him and sits when he offers her to. For a while, they sit nervously next to each other, the ocean roaring outside, waves licking only a few feet below the mouth of the cave, but never reaching it. The air is salty. The boy reaches out a careful hand, lays it on top of the girl's. She doesn't pull away after a few moments, so he takes her hand and strokes it with the pad of his thumb, calloused and rough, trying to be gentle. She smiles shyly at him, and then he pulls her close and kisses her. He's clumsy, young, in love. Adolescent limbs that won't obey, young cheeks flushed with excitement and maybe a bit of shame, and fingers, usually so skilled, turn plump and heavy. A teenage boy in love, and the girl lets him. She allows his ministrations, for a while tries to take part in the entertainment, but stops when she notices that her participation isn't really desired. Finally, after a few minutes filled with panting and salt sea air, she pushes against his chest. He gathers her hands in his, keeps on kissing her. She tears her hands out of his grip and gathers all her strength, pushing hard enough to send him stumbling. He lands on his ass in the pile of leaves he made 10 minutes ago. She's stronger than him, not as thin, not as pale. She doesn't live in dungeons and doesn't have to hide half her life in a dark corner. Girls don't get beaten half as much as boys. His eyes are wide, his chest heaves, and he watches, helplessly, as the girl jumps to her feet, rights her clothes, smooths her hair back. She doesn't look at him as she turns and attempts to climb through the cave, back into the open, where the rest of the children are playing. His voice, pained, small, alone, stops her. Why? She looks at him, unwilling, eyes half closed with the desire to look away, but she doesn't. You're a freak. Everyone thinks you're a freak, and in a few years you'll go back to that school of yours and never come back after this year. You're not worth getting ridiculed by everyone. Some groping in a dark cave is not worth being called a freak. I can't walk away to some fancy school and people will point at me. Rejection and loneliness floods him like a tidal wave as her voice, like acid, drips onto the floor between them, ruining everything. He's not worth it. He's never worth anything. Not good enough. Not enough for his mother, his father, Slytherin, this girl. Never enough. He crumbles, curls into himself here on the hard and cold rock floor as the candle above him flickers. He's never enough. Never, never, never. And then something changes. He feels it like a pinprick of light deep inside his chest, and it spreads. It grows and envelops him like he's always imagined a mother's hug to feel like. He can feel it around him, taste it, and knows that it's magic. Magic has come for him, finally, to take him away from all this pain. He's enough for magic. Magic is enough for him. He doesn't need anything else, and that's where it all goes so horribly wrong. The girl stops as she hears him rise behind her back, turns to look at him, and he feels the hate rising like bile, filling his mouth, his nose, his senses, until all he sees is this girl, another one who thinks he's not good enough. But he is. Oh, he is. And he's got magic to prove it. He can feel her struggle, that power inside of him, that mother come to him after all his pains. She tries to show him things, tries to make him see things, but he's tired of seeing, tired of watching, outside, alone, unwanted. He's tired. Things will change now. Magic will make things change. It won't change him. He's waited for so many years, and now it's his turn. See how they like it. See how they like never being enough. He takes a step towards the girl, who tries to evade him, stumbles backwards, hits her head on hard rock, and glances up at him with terror in her gaze. Magic rises in his chest like a roaring lion, but there's no power like hate. Nothing is hard and unforgiving. Nothing that resembles steel and bricks so much. The girl bleeds, and the boy pulls his wand, aims, and there's a flash of green. Wide eyes, red eyes against a pale gray backdrop. So much red, and then there's silence. Magic settles inside of him, a numb cloud of regret. Tom smirks down at the girl and notices a glittering bracelet on her left wrist. It's cheap plastic, but a treasure among their kind. He takes it, stuffs it in his pants. He'll be enough. Oh, he'll be everything anyone could ever want from now on. He's through. His hand on the bracelet in his pocket, he climbs out of the cave as the candle behind him flickers and dies. What's left is a dead girl in a spot swept clean of leaves and twigs, and the bitter taste of twisted magic, of helpless fear. He's through. A blind girl wakes, her unseeing eyes fixed on sticky red hair, crying. A brunette man sits up beside his wife, horror dancing in his chest, crying. A petite woman snaps upright, drenched in sweat, crying. A lavender-eyed baby twists in its crib, crying. An old woman stumbles and clutches her cane close, crying. A boy clenches his eyes shut, a silent scream frozen in his throat, crying. A mother drops the frying pan, holding her head, crying. Three children skip down the street, laughing, holding hands. They sing nursery rhymes, and the two girls twirl until their skirts fly up, and the boy claps his little hands in time with their steps. Suddenly, they stop dead in their tracks, falling silent like birds before a storm, and the boy asks... Buffy wakes between Luna and Harry, her eyes hollow and her fists clench. For the first time since she's 7, she cries. Order meetings are more a nuisance than anything else. Luna is not allowed to come, and Dumbledore strictly refuses to make an exception just for her, just this once. So Harry sulks, arms crossed over his chest, and snaps at everyone in the vicinity with the vindictive pettiness of a child. Across from him, at the lower end of the table, as far away from any decisions as possible, Buffy amuses herself by clacking tunes with her nails on the table. She smiles condescendingly like an indulgent parent at the so-called adults around her as they squabble and fight amongst themselves like teenagers on a hormone high. Occasionally, she takes a bit out of Harry's book and throws a cutting remark into the atmosphere, just to be ignored or glared at. It's a circus, the Order is, a place for fools and clowns that fight about war strategy like it is tomorrow's meal. They're fighting about the training Moody wants to give Harry. Real training, he calls it. And everyone, Weasleys before anyone else, keep telling him that it's wrong to teach a child such things. Nobody asks the child what he thinks, and for a moment their eyes meet across the table and Buffy stops tapping out her favorite song. She sighs in resignation and speaks up because no one else will. So you expect him to stun and tickle Voldemort? And then... you lean back and wait for him to get back to his feet while you sleep in your bed of righteousness and moral high ground? She snorts inelegantly, and her voice drips venom like snakes, winding around every person in the room, whispering at the back of their minds. She's their doubt, and it's time they listen because there are people dying while they squabble like children. She sleeps on a bed of bones every night, and she's tired of people looking down on her because she can kill with a song in her heart. A song and nothing else, because at 22, she's seen too much already. The chambers of her heart are empty, waiting to be filled. The sky above her is black, and she won't be a fireman when the flood rolls back. She knows that now. These people don't. They walk and talk and shop and sneeze, but their eyes see nothing. They see nothing. The outrage comes as soon as she closes her mouth, hacking and slicing, yelling and biting through the room, tearing her apart where she sits. In the end, she pulls a dagger out of nowhere and throws it, embedding it in the wall beside Snape's head, up to the hilt. It reverberates with the force of her throw, quivering beside the potion master's ear, and everyone falls silent. And she asks into the shock and quiet, asks with a voice like snow in December and naked children in a winter's night, "What do you do?" "Do you do anything at all?" is the part that goes unsaid but not unheard. Somehow, nobody quite meets her eyes. They spend hours every day, walking empty hallways and long-kept secrets, crawling through cobwebs and sneezing because the dust lies as thick as the memories do in some places, and they feel like they can't breathe anymore. Like there's no clean air left in the world, nothing that's not tainted by memory and remembrance in one way or another. They talk to paintings and dig through a millennium worth of junk and forgotten schoolwork, books and essays, and they go to bed exhausted, dirty, and without success. A bit more defeated every day. Luna crashes into the silence of the Order meeting with a loud bang as the door hits the wall and the blonde opens her mouth, eyes wide with some unknown pleasure and uncovered secret. She is interrupted before she can draw breath to speak by none other than Dumbledore, who stands tall and demands, "How did you get in here?" She blinks while Harry smothers a smile and Buffy unconcernedly walks around the table to retrieve her dagger. "First I dismantled the wards on the gargoyle, then I used the secret latch under the left wing to activate the stairs, then I transferred the wards on your door to the top button of my blouse, transfigured it into a dust mote, and blew it down the stairs, before using a simple spinning kick to break the mechanical lock on the door." She ignores the dumbfounded stares she gets, because, in her opinion, These people deserve all the shocks they get for treating adults like children and letting children act like adults. Deserve them for calling Harry weak and Buffy silly. She turns to the others, brushing a bit of lint from her skirt, and says, I found it. Harry's chair scrapes over the floor loudly as he jumps to his feet in time to avoid Buffy as she vaults over the table, and then the three of them are out the room, down the stairs, and running through the corridors, Luna in the lead. With exchanged glances and a few curses, the Order follows their lead, running after the mad children. The only one who has a clue of what might be happening is Snape, and he sends a prayer to gods he doesn't believe in as he watches the three, not children at all, tumble around the corner, laughing loudly. He's the only one who can hear the sorrow and the bitter fear underneath the laughter, he thinks. To the third floor they run, through the door leading to Fluffy's old room, and then down the trap door that was supposed to be sealed shut. They trample around the burnt remains of Dead Devil's snare, and turn to the left, duck through a low arch, and stand in front of a secret door with no lock and no key. Did you know about the door, Headmaster? Someone whispers, and Dumbledore shakes his head no, he didn't know. Luna kneels before the door, sticking her fingers through the slit underneath, groping for something until suddenly the door springs open with a crack. How she found the latch is anyone's guess, because no one feels the slight rumble under their feet, none but the three children. And they hear the grief in it. They found what they're looking for. Inside, the room is small, as the door indicates it to be. There are some old trunks, some memories and books on a table, wiped clean of all clutter. It's thick with dust, but there is a single item laid upon that table, like some pagan offering on an altar of a long-forgotten deity. A single item, glittering in the dim light of the wands they lit. Oh, shit, Buffy whispers, and stops dead in her tracks, staring at that item as if she could recognize more than a vague shape through the layers of dust and age. Harry stops beside her, frowning. So this is it? Luna nods as she wriggles her way under his arm. Yep. Yep, Buffy echoes. Harry points. Are you going to take that? The girls shake their heads in chorus clearly. Nope. He glares at Buffy. You're supposed to be the tough one. She glares right back. You're supposed to be the hero. It's Luna who moves, unwinding herself from her friend, taking a step forward to lift the item off the table, only to have Harry grab her around the waist and jerk her back while Buffy snatches whatever it is they came for. She shudders as she touches it, feeling cold bile rise in her throat, feeling magic stir in her gut, a eulogy for a dead girl and a boy who died with her. She dangles it from one finger, careful to keep it away from everyone else, and whispers, "This is it." The cheap plastic bracelet glitters dully as it swings gently on its perch, looking so innocent. Luna refuses to look at it, and Harry has tears in his eyes. Buffy just stands there. They do not dare touch it more than necessary, but neither do they feel comfortable throwing a cleaning charm at it, so the bracelet lies on the middle of the coffee table in Buffy's room, dust and dirt still clinging to it. They sit around it, their faces lit by nothing but the few candles around them, and Luna shivers as the witching hour approaches because she can feel, oh, how she can feel this little bit of cheap jewelry. It makes her want to kneel down and scream until her throat is raw and her eyes water, scream until everything stops and takes notice of her, of this tiny beaded bracelet that is so heavy with hate and anger, rage and death. Yet they sit around it, staring, unable to look away, to turn their backs. Why do you think he left it? She whispers. Harry shrugs. Maybe he intended to come back for it? And Buffy offers. Maybe he didn't understand. He leans back in his chair, eyes not for one moment leaving the table. Why the bracelet? It's Buffy's turn to shrug as she reaches out a hand to touch the scar on his forehead, tracing it with gentle fingers. Then her hand drifts to Luna's collarbone and the tiny scar resting there, nestled just beside the hollow of her throat. It's from a piece of glass, shattered by the screams of a baby that felt 14 years ago. She touches it briefly before tracing the scars on her left knee through her jeans without looking. She traces them as she stares through the wall at a dead man lying in a pool of his own blood, and she can taste the copper in the air. Her hand falls away to be picked up by Harry and squeezed tightly. These are the scars that made them, their marks of magic, the symbol for everything they have been given and everything that's been lost. They all have them, every one of magic's children, everyone except Tom. He has this glittery piece of cheap plastic taken off a dead girl to mark him as a child of magic. So wrong, so horribly wrong. Something went horribly wrong. Why is he different? That's the real question. You mean, Luna elaborates, why don't we hate like he did? Why he went right where we went left? Harry questions. Yes. Buffy frees her hand long enough to snatch Luna's and pull the girl across both their laps. Then she pushes her hand back under Harry's and said, I think there was something wrong with him before. She points at the bracelet in her dream, a dream of a girl dying and a boy falling, dances before her mind's eye. Beside her, Harry shifts and mumbles, We grew up the same way, he and I. Buffy slaps him as Luna sits up straight with a start. She grabs his face with her hands before he can rub his stinging cheek, and she speaks more clearly than she ever has before. You did not, she orders, forcing him to look her in the eye. You never were alone. Her voice is sharp like Buffy's knives and his magic words, sharp like glass, and it cuts right down to the center of his doubts and fears. She trails off, voice getting softer, and then she presses a kiss on his abused cheek. He takes a moment to glare at Buffy while he massages the sting out of his face before accepting. I wasn't. Luna nods like she knew that all along and lays back down across their legs. Her eyes are on the ceiling. He hated, and he took magic when it was offered, and he took his hate, and he flung both at the world. He forgot how to love long before magic came to him. So we take the bracelet, Harry deducts, voice flat, and we use it against him. We use it against him, Buffy confirms. They'll use it against him as he used magic against them, against the world, against innocent children. They feel guilt, and they feel humiliation, because he used to be like them, and now he's not. He used to be a lonely child, unloved and disillusioned. A child that no one understood, but now he's a cold man, and death follows where he leads. Tom is all wrong now. Magic gifted him like it gifted them with what they need to kill him, to correct the mistake magic made 50 years ago when she offered herself to a boy that had already forgotten what love was. To kill what magic once created. It's wrong, so horribly, terribly wrong, but they'll do it because this is what they are programmed for. They'll do it because they are not Tom, and they won't give in to the bitterness. Three children skipping down the street, laughing, holding hands. They sing nursery rhymes, and the two girls twirl until their skirts fly up, and the boy claps his little hands in time with their steps. Suddenly, they stop dead in their tracks, falling silent like birds before a storm, and the boy asks, Hermione is a good watcher. She notices the things others don't, and draws conclusions that most people would not, explaining magic with logic, taking the sparks out of people's eyes. Her world is made up of angles and straight lines. It's ordered. Except for one thing. She finds Harry where she always finds him since Buffy came, and Luna turned into a different person, in Buffy's room. He opens the door and motions for her to come in like he lives there, and maybe he does, because he certainly doesn't live where he used to anymore. Everything's different, and Harry is the one thing in Hermione's life that makes no sense, that has no order and is not linear. Harry is everywhere and all over the place. He's loud and skewed and bright and wrong. He blows through her life like a hurricane at least thrice a week, and sometimes she dislikes herself just a bit for forgiving him every time he gives her that smile of his. He waves her over to the couch, dropping into a comfortable chair next to where Luna is lying flat on her back on the floor, staring at the ceiling wide-eyed. She reaches out and wraps one hand loosely around Harry's ankle, not to hold him, Hermione decides, but to reassure herself that he is here and real, and so is she. Luna flickers sometimes, like a hologram, like she's not here at all. Buffy does too, but Hermione refuses to put any thought into this. Any success yet? Harry asks Luna, ignoring his best friend like she's thin air. Hermione doesn't understand him anymore. I'm not quite sure. There's too many squiggles in the sky to see clearly. Maybe Buffy can help you see, he suggests. And there is something strange about the way he says see, like it's special when it's not. Hermione doesn't understand her best friend anymore. Buffy comes as if called, skipping out of the bathroom in skimpy underwear, toweling her hair and wondering, where did I put my green shirt? Laundry, Harry and Luna chorus, and Buffy sighs, grabbing an oversized shirt from the back of the chair, pulling it on. It belongs to Harry. Then she sits on the floor, leaning against his legs, eyes closed, and wordlessly, he starts finger-combing her hair with a patience and precision Hermione never knew he had. She watches the scene unfold for minutes and minutes, watches Harry being someone she has never seen. She attempts to speak a time or five, but always stops herself, and no one asks her what she wants here. So she gets up and walks to the door, tears in her eyes as she closes it quietly. Harry doesn't look up. She's still crying hours later, wrapped around Ron, the one who stayed, the one that's left for her to love and understand. The common room is empty, dead in the dead of night like it's supposed to be. Only Hermione doesn't know how things are supposed to be anymore, and so she lies on a sofa in front of the fireplace and cries for a dead friend who still breathes. Buffy comes like she does everything else, silently and without explanation. The head girl is too tired to ask where she got the password, watching through tear-swollen eyes as the older woman kneels down in front of her, placing a careful hand on the brunette girl's cheek. "Don't be so sad," she orders softly, looking up at Ron and back down at Hermione. "Life's too short." A platitude, empty words and hollow threats that they have heard so many times before. But Buffy gives them life, gives them truth like she knows. Hermione sniffles and tries to sound angry when she says, "You're stealing him away from us." The blonde sits back on her haunches, like a girl in a playground. A child, but not. All wrong, and she sounds like she's scolding a naughty doll. You know that's not true. Ron places a heavy hand on Hermione's shoulder and snaps, "He's bloody well pushing us away like we don't matter at all." "Silly children," she laughs, getting to her feet and walking to the fireplace where she jumps and twists and somehow lands sitting on the mantel, legs dangling over the roaring fire, unafraid. "I had a stuffed pig once." Hermione sits up, blows her nose, and waits. "His name was Mr. Gordo. My dad gave him to me when I was 2, after I fell off the swing. He said that Mr. Gordo would protect me when he couldn't, and from that day on, Mr. Gordo went everywhere I went. He was even allowed to bathe with me whenever I would sneak in past Mom." "Why are you telling us about some bloody pig?" Ron doesn't understand. "Shush, you. Mr. Gordo went with me on every adventure I had until I was 7. One day I went shopping with Mom, and we were just crossing the street when a drunk driver came shooting around the corner. Mom managed to drag me out of the way, but a man got hit by the car. He died in front of my eyes, and I was scared. So very scared of the world. It seemed much bigger and much more dangerous, and suddenly I was afraid. I knew I couldn't stay in my room forever, but there was one thing I could do. I could protect Mr. Gordo. He got roughed up that day, dirty and bloody. Mom washed him, and when I got him back, I placed him on my pillow, and after that day, I never took him with me again. I kept him safe from the bad things happening in the world, because I loved him more than anything else in the world." She closes her eyes, a sad smile on her lips. "And it made going out there easier, knowing that he was waiting for me when I got home." There is a long silence before Hermione asks, with a hint of laughter in her voice, "Are you comparing us to a stuffed pig?" The blonde shakes her head, giving the two on the sofa a stern look. "Of course not, silly. I was just telling you a story." She drops off the mantle, landing on her feet, and is already halfway out the door when Ron calls after her. "Hey, thank you." "Stay safe," she orders without stopping, as the portrait swings open. "For Harry," comes as a whisper on the wind, and Hermione takes Ron's hand, squeezing it tightly. Do we really have to do this? Buffy asks, nose scrunched up and fist curled into a tight, white mass of emotion she doesn't understand, but Luna does, and she smooths the hand over the other girl's brow. Yes, Harry speaks, making truth with his words and words with his truth. Buffy glares at him, but relaxes her hand and lays them on top of the sheets, giving Luna a weak smile. I don't want to. Luna just snuggles deeper into her side as Harry throws an arm around both their waists. I know, he says, and he does. They really have to do this, but that doesn't make the bile taste any less bitter. Things move fast suddenly, like an avalanche or maybe a flood, rushing towards them with unstoppable force, threatening to bury them alive, but it won't. The force is magic, and she drives them all, pushes her pieces together, and while Tom doesn't know, Buffy, Harry, and Luna do, and even though they curl into each other and cry late at night, they let themselves be moved like chess pieces. They know there's no way out whether they fight or not, so they give in, and Buffy demands to be the White Queen, causing Luna to chase her around the castle with her wand, yelling threats. Luna wants to be the queen. The Order just looks on with worried eyes and weary hearts, scared to let Harry fight when he spends his time with those two insane girls, pleading hide-and-seek while war rages outside. They are scared that he can't save them, and he wants to yell, "Finally! Finally, you see!" He doesn't, though, because he knows what's to come. And he'll make this right even if no one has ever made things right for him. But bitterness tastes like ashes, and so he helps Luna chase Buffy and refuses to think at all. Like in heaven, I can't wait until I feel your rain. It's almost spring when Buffy wakes in the middle of the night, wrapping her arms around her knees, eyes closed, humming a song about loneliness and rain, about children and faith. What's to come, she whispers, as she lets Luna hug her, flood her with warmth that isn't real. Her eyes fix on Harry, and he finishes for her, saying, it's here. A murmur goes through the great hall as the three enter for breakfast, joining the children they act like but aren't, and for once, Snape is not the only one who sees something wrong with them. They eat quickly, methodically, and once they're done, Harry rises, two blonde shadows in tow, and meanders up to the high table. Behind him, all conversation dies. He stops in front of the headmaster, not as a child, not as a student, but, Snape thinks, as something else entirely, looking him in the eye. He's coming as we speak. Dumbledore's face turns grim as he decides, then we have to prepare. Buffy snorts, and Luna giggles, waving her wand at the ceiling, tracing clouds. Harry nods, giving permission to the old wizard who didn't know he needed it, but does, and says, Tom belongs to us. A nod of agreement. Yes, this is how it has to be. Buffy pulls Luna's wand arm down, and they both stop smiling. Be careful, my boy. Harry smiles and shakes his head, face serene. He whispers, you never taught me how. And he hasn't. Life is not a lesson one soldier has ever taught another, and Snape turns his gaze to the ground with nothing left to say. He's seen what lies beneath these soldiers' skin. Dumbledore lowers his snow-white head and he weeps because he knows now, knows what's to come. He's powerless, and for the first time he tastes some of the bitterness that comes with certainty, the same bitterness that Harry eats, breathes, and drinks every day. And it humbles him. So where's your life? Who's living the rest of your life? The wards go off in a shrill orchestra of sound and fear, screeching through every nook and cranny of the castle, and the evacuation into the dungeons looks like an exploding anthill from where Harry stands at Luna and Buffy, at the head of the stairs in the entrance hall. Ron and Hermione suddenly break free of the crowd, running up the stairs and jumping into his arms, riding all five of them to the ground. Hermione cries. Will you let us fight? Ron asks. But his eyes rest on Buffy, and he knows the answer before Harry shakes his head. But you'll come find us when it's over, when you've won? Hermione is supposed to be the rational one, but her head is buried in Harry's shoulder, and she has never seen the looks exchanged between three children, soldiers, whores. So Harry lies to her and rubs her back, eyes closed, inhaling the scent of a childhood he never had, before disengaging himself from them and standing slowly. There will be no after. Fifteen teachers, 20 order members, one girl who sees, one boy who speaks, one girl who feels. On the other side, 50 Death Eaters and a boy who never learned love, clutching power close like a blanket on a cold night, filling the world with green hate. A boy who could have been one of them, but isn't, because he's wrong, was wrong, always has been, maybe, and magic was too blind by his grief to see. Tom has no scar to mark him, only inflicting them on others. He tries taunting Harry, tries making Dumbledore rush into battle, threatens, coaxes, promises, and lies so sweetly it makes Luna's insides churn like curdled milk, because it's all wrong. Bill and Charlie want to react. Snape's wand glows, Remus growls, and Tonks is bouncing on her heels, eager, so eager to avenge her outcast mother. Harry just stands there, a small hand in each of his, waiting, breathing, whispering, "Come." It's Bella, beautiful, ugly Bellatrix Lestrange, who thinks the command is meant for her and her fellow eaters of death and decay when it's not. Her who throws the first curse, narrowly missing Buffy, who bends backwards like a dancer. After that, it's a free-for-all, slaughter that has Luna whimpering and Harry running, dodging, spinning, while a grim expression settles over Buffy's features. Known song. This is a known song ingrained in her bones, written on her skin, tattooed on her soul. So old, so familiar. She draws her swords, feeling the weight of them in her hands, their leather-bound grips scraping against callous skin. Around her, the world settles, falls into place and focus, and she breathes for a moment. Wet grass and soil, fear and sweat, the coppery flavor of the first blood spilled. She breathes, and Luna stops whimpering, Harry stops floundering, and the fight starts. Harry moves on his feet like he does in the air, grace and speed, throwing cutters and stunners, bone breakers and throat crushers. Luna floats through the battle like a cloud, transfiguring heads into mushrooms and wand arms into carnivorous plants, with a giggle and a spin, while Buffy slices and dices, cutting holes and graving paths, neither of them makes prisoners, watches the enemy fall. Even Luna knows no mercy. She feels pain and death, release and endings, and she allows them to flow through her and back into the world, taking no part in them, making hearts around her heavy. She has no need for emotions. She has certainty. Remus crumbles and Snape stumbles. Arthur falls and Molly rages over his prone body for long minutes before she, too, succumbs to the inevitability of green light and sinks to the ground. More orphans. More pain. Harry shakes his head in denial, anger, moves faster. Professor Vector doesn't make it back to the castle doors. Snape comes back up, wand in hand but shaking. It's Buffy's sword that takes a curse meant for him, her that spins and takes another head. Snape catches her eye and gives a nod of thanks, taking down a black figure sneaking up on her, soldier to soldier. Then Buffy is gone back into the fray, passing Luna as she kneels next to a bleeding Lupin, taking his hand in hers. She sucks the pain, the fear, the sadness out of him, taking away all emotion except the relief, and flings them in the face of Adolphus Lestrange, making him stumble long enough to turn his nose and mouth into vines that claw at his face and eyes. He fires a screaming curse that goes wild, hitting his wife in the knee, shattering it. Lucius Malfoy is Tonks by her throat, wand aimed at her heart when Harry tackles him from behind, sending them into the dirt in a tangle of limbs. He rolls to his feet, firing a bone-breaking hex at the Death Eater, eyes looking around wildly. It's time. Has been time since Tom showed up, but he was scared. They all were. No more stalling. No more excuses. Buffy finishes Malfoy off with a precise slice, coming up next to him. She lost one sword on the way, making up for it with a dagger, both dripping blood and life. It's time. Luna comes in from his other side, sweat beating on her forehead. Wave upon wave of despair and rage pouring off her skin. She smiles at Harry, grimy and dirty, reaches behind him to pull Buffy's dagger from her hand and squeeze her red fingers. Buffy squeezes back, snapping off a sloppy salute with her other hand, and Harry rolls his eyes. It's time, and they all know it. "Stop," Harry says. Magic obeys, stops halfway from killing, hanging suspended in the air as wands drop and confusion overtakes the fighters. Magic stops, and so do they because they are magic and Harry spoke. Buffy drops her sword next to the dagger and twirls a finger in the air. No more playing. No more spells and wand waving, three-syllable incantations. Her finger moves, and after the second twirl, the spell closest to her starts moving with it, and another, until magic blurs around them in a veil of light and violence. She takes a step forward, and the wall grows thicker and thicker as colors mix, and Luna pushes feeling into it, giving it strength as it encases an arena of dirt and death and light and magic, locking in four children that were touched by magic. Three of them were faithful, but one strayed, and now it's time to pay up. Tom lifts his wand, flings an incantation in hate at the wall of magic and feeling, but nothing happens, so he yells for green and aims at Harry, but nothing happens. He roars, "I'll kill you, Potter! You and your whores, I'll kill you!" Buffy keeps walking until she stands at Tom's left shoulder, and Luna takes the other direction, picking Tom's right as her place. Harry just shakes his head and repeats, "Come." The finger stops moving, emotion stops flowing, and magic spinning, becoming first solid and then transparent. Inside the ring, four people watch the last Death Eaters succumb to the light, watch an army of students flooding the field of battle, searching for family and loved ones and hated ones, or just standing there, staring at the shimmering clear wall locking mortal enemies together. Dumbledore stands, held up by his sheep, and next to him, Hermione cries again into Ron's shoulder. There was a time, Harry thinks, when she was rational and logical, and never cried, but he suspects that he broke something inside of her, and he's sorry. He'll make it right. Behind black sunglasses in the night, tears well up in milky eyes. Carefully, she places her stick and purse on the ground next to her. She won't need them now. Fumbling around for a moment, she finds the warm and soft form of her cat and strokes it for just a moment, just the way it likes to be stroked. It purrs loudly as its owner fades from view. He looks around the small apartment, looks for something left to do. There's nothing there. The windows are closed, the stove is turned off. He hugged his wife goodbye this morning after making love to her for hours, looking deep into her eyes. A prickle goes through the scar on his back, and he closes his eyes briefly. It's time. He stands with one last look at the empty sheet of paper on the kitchen table. There's no sense in writing that letter. It's time. He follows the call. She's lying in the dark, curled into herself, breathing deeply as she works up the courage to let go from everything she's ever known, one hand pressed over the fading scar in her stomach. The price is too high. It's too high. But she knows what's going to happen as she drove her car into a tree and begged for a second chance. So she'll be brave. She'll be brave and do this. Eyes screwed shut, she holds very still as the feeling of soft cotton around her fades away. It doesn't understand what it's doing, not really, but it knows what's to come, and so it clutches its favorite teddy bear close and follows a soft voice that sounds a bit like Daddy, leaving behind an empty crib and a sobbing mother. It'll be all right, it wants to say, but it has no words yet. It's all right, she thinks as she pulls the white dress over her head and lies down on top of the covers. She knew this would come. Her affairs are in order. She pulls the last pin out of her steel-gray hair and flicks it away. She chuckles. Such silly behavior at her age. It's undignified. And yet, she can't help feeling like a girl of 20 again as magic lifts her away. I love you, Dad, he whispers, pressing a small kiss to his sleeping father's forehead. Then he grabs the remote and switches off the TV, leaving the room silent. He walks toward the door without a backward glance, opening it and stepping through with an mighty step. His feet never touch the hallway. So, this is it, she wonders out loud. He nods, pulling her closer. This is it. He presses a chaste kiss to her lips, and the next time she blinks, the park around them is gone. She kissed her girls goodbye. She tucked them in. She checked on them. She brought Mary a glass of water. She had a good cry. She cleaned the kitchen. She spent half an hour in front of the mirror, tracing the white scar hidden by long hair. She got 10 extra years. She got 2 wonderful girls. It's time now. Albus watches them appear one by one, shadowy figures, like ghosts, but not. some looking happy, others with grief written across their faces. A little girl of maybe 10 is first, then a man on a crutch, a blind woman, a teenaged boy, a baby suspended in midair, a transparent teddy bear clutched in its tiny hands. But not a single one of those strange and beautiful creatures of mist and light makes a sound. They are silent like the dead as they fill the circle between Buffy, Harry, and Luna, surround Tom with big eyes and wordless vigil. A middle-aged woman lifts a misty hand to wave at Buffy, who smiles back briefly. The circle is closed, and still more of these not-ghosts materialize, forming a second circle and another one until they reach the wall of magic making the perimeter of the arena. They float next to each other, inside each other, above each other, but they do not pass Harry and the girls, do not enter the zone of flat and dead land where Tom stands and watches. Even from where he stands, Albus can see in Tom's eyes that he understands at least some of what is going on inside this prison Buffy and Luna created. And he's scared. Luna tips her head back, her hair flowing in the breeze, tickling the apparitions behind and around her, causing the little boy to giggle. She smiles. Everyone's here. Magic has collected all of her children on Harry's orders, have brought them all together in this place, here and now and through all ages, yesterday and tomorrow, every second of every moment in time. Every creature magic has ever loved is here, in this place, inside this circle, making magic sing like a proud mother. It doesn't understand that Harry has not called them all for a family gathering, but an execution. Doesn't know that he will turn magic against itself. Harry looks around and feels a shudder run down his spine. There are more than he thought. Many more. Doesn't matter now. A plan is a plan, Buffy always says. He looks at her, giving her one last bright smile. She grins back, a flicker of a little girl inside of her. Luna smiles at him too, like the cake-baking sweetheart she used to be. And then he drops his wand, heedless of where it falls, and digs deep into his pocket, pulling out a cheap plastic bracelet with death and hate clinging to every bead. Buffy feels the cool firmness of astral bodies all around her, feels them pressing against her skin and mind, and years of split lips and broken bones, of dark cupboards and fading photographs, fade in a rush of other minds, other stories, other tragedies. There are so many, she thinks, and brushes a strand of hair out of her face. It's time. Three children skipping down the street, laughing, holding hands. They sing nursery rhymes, and the two girls twirl until their skirts fly up, and the little boy claps his hands in time with their steps. Suddenly, they stop dead in their tracks, falling silent like birds before a storm, and the boy asks, "Are you ready?" Buffy shakes her head, unsure suddenly, and Luna mouths, "No." Not yet, not ever, not for this. A plan is a plan, but this is so much more, and they were never taught this. Harry just stands there for a beat, then he asks, "Are you ready?" And Buffy's vision comes true as Luna nods, "Yes." Tom's fear is overcome by anger, and he screeches, "What are you doing, Potter?" "We're making it right," Harry whispers, but his voice carries through the silent army of ghost spectators like a ripple. Drawing an arm back, one and the other held out and straight in front of him, he throws the bracelet. Tom catches it. He catches the bracelet, catches his past and his future, staring at it in horror as Harry speaks, "Take it back." The air inside the ring ripples. Tom is frozen in horror as the smell of sea salt and blood invades his nostrils. He shakes his head as a single tear slips down his cheek. "No," he whispers, but it's too late. 50 years too late. "Take it back," Harry repeats. Outside the ring, the air pulses and the earth buckles. Hermione drops to her knees. "Take it back," Luna echoes. Behind them, Hogwarts groans like a dying titan. "Take it back," Buffy says. Tonks stumbles, clawing at her throat. "Take it back," the little girl picks up the chant. All noises cease. Birds fall silent. Inside the ring, magic is dancing again, swirling like mad, picking up speed with every second. "Take it back," another ghost breaks the silence. The magical storm grows and grows and grows. Albus can't keep himself up anymore. Take it back, and another. The world holds its breath. Take it back! The storm outside explodes outward, shattering the transparent wall, tearing into rocks and trees and ghosts and people, ripping the worlds to shreds. Take it back! Harry screams, his voice echoed by Buffy and Luna. Take it back! Take it back. Magic obeys. Buffy isn't really watching your step, engrossed in the tourist guide, planning what she'll do with her 3 family-free hours all alone in London. So it's really no wonder that she runs into the other girl, sending them both to the ground in a tangle of limbs and bags as her book goes flying. Hastily, she apologizes as she scrambles to help pick up the contents of a dropped bag. A 3rd pair of hands joins them in their work. She grabs a notebook that has Luna written on it in fancy script, and she suppresses a snort at the name. She picks herself up, holding the book out to this Luna, who accepts a pack of gum and a pencil from the 3rd pair of hands, a black-haired boy. Then she takes the notebook and smiles shyly, blue eyes big and uncertain, half-covered by long blonde hair. The black-haired boy gives her a half-grin as well, green eyes sparkling with mischief, and a stab of déjà vu so sharp it hurts shoots through Buffy as she sees them standing next to each other. But then it passes and she hears the boy say, "You girls should be more careful where you walk." Luna blushes, and Buffy waves him off, telling the other girl, "I'm so sorry I ran into you. I wasn't paying attention at all. I was so busy doing the tourist thing." Luna shakes her head, offering, Neither was I. Sorry. Harry, a female voice suddenly calls. We'll be late. He shrugs apologetically, rolling his eyes. Coming, Mom. And then he's gone. My parents are waiting too, Luna says as she pushes past Buffy and starts down the sidewalk, softly humming a song about loneliness and rain, about children and faith. She looks back over her shoulder, but the other girl is already gone. Then she stops for a second, wondering where she heard the melody before, but she can't remember. Strange. It's a beautiful song, and it makes her heart ache. No matter. She'll be late for dinner if she doesn't hurry. Author's note. Where do I start? First, this is where the idea for Trinity comes from, so parallels are a given. I am well aware that 18,000 words for a one-shot is a bit obscene, but the thing just got away from me. Secondly, I am well aware that this story is not going to appeal to everyone. It's too eccentric for that. And don't expect too much coherency, but it's grown on me a lot over the year I spent writing it, so please be gentle. Or at least constructive. Thanks. Also, to my beta, Annalise, who suffered through being my sounding board, corrected the first part, and generally did a wonderful job as always. And Amuse with a View, who corrected the final draft and came up with a wicked cool title. And believe me, the old one sucked something horrible. Thanks to both of you. You rock really hard. Buffy's song belongs to Guano Apes and is called Rain.